Hi, this is Michael Waits, and welcome back to Globe Change. Globe Change is a Uniglobe podcast in collaboration with Next Step and Michael Waits Media. And Uniglobe is Thailand's first student-run organization to provide university application and other insights through events and its online platform. Next Step is an advanced experiential learning organization based in Asia, providing internships, study abroad programs, and learning expeditions for high school students, university students, and businesses. And one of the best to do this in Asia, by the way. The Globe Change podcast features stories of accomplished and inspiring Southeast Asian high school graduates that are now in colleges and universities across the globe. And on this episode, I am joined by Unita Kikarjai. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I just finished a class and I'm just, you know, resting now.
You just finished a class. So do you live in a dorm? I'm really curious. So you...
First years here at UBC have guaranteed student housing, so I live in one of the student residences.
Got it. I had the same thing when I was at school. And where exactly are you, actually? You said UBC. What is that? University of...
University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and I'm in the Point Grey campus.
Got it.
Which is the one, like, near the beach.
Nice.
Yeah.
But is it still cold there?
It's getting warmer. It's kind of weird because about a month ago we just had a huge snowstorm, and now it's very sunny outside and the bees are out.
Do you ski?
I went skiing once and it didn't go very well.
What does that mean, it didn't go very well?
I went on the intermediate route not knowing it was intermediate, and nice. Then halfway through I had to just scooch down the mountain because I couldn't ski anymore.
I've done that. So I lived in Japan for a while, and the first time I went skiing there, we went to this really big mountain with some friends of mine, and they're like, we're getting in the gondola and we're going all the way to the top. And I was like, this is going to end really badly. Yeah, and it did.
Yeah.
I basically fell down the mountain. Like, I didn't do the scooch thing, but I basically just like kept falling. I'm terrible at skiing.
I ended up just rolling down at one point.
Right? Like, they cannot be fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, so where are you from originally?
I'm from Thailand originally. I was born in Sukhothai in the north, and then I moved to Sriracha, like near Bangkok.
Yeah, why? Yeah. Sriracha is interesting, though. It's almost like a big Japanese manufacturing town. Why did you guys move there?
My dad got a job at SIG CompuBlock, so we moved there because the factory was there in Rayong.
Makes sense. Yep.
Yeah.
Got it. I've been to Rayong a lot, actually.
Yeah, with the industrial park there.
Well, there's a massive industrial park there. Now the Thai government, through the Digital Economy Promotion Agency and the Ministry of I can't remember the name of it, but the ministries are building an even bigger industrial park and also building a bigger digital park down there as well. There's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on in the EEC, as you would know, but most people don't. So it's interesting that that's where you lived. But you also left Thailand for a little bit as well, right?
Yeah, when I was 9, I moved to China because my dad's company also had a branch in China, so they sent him there, and our family followed.
So that's what I was going to ask you. I was really curious when I found out that you spent some time living in China, because I thought that would be a really interesting move for just a young kid to ask their parents if they could go to China. Where exactly did you live when you were there?
I live in Suzhou, which is also an industrial park. It's kind of like Sriracha. Because it's also 2 hours away from Shanghai.
You probably won't believe this, but in 1991, I went on a three-week trip to China, starting in Shanghai. We took a train, an overnight train, from Shanghai to Suzhou. And if I'm correct, and again, tell me if I'm wrong, right? But it's almost like the Venice of China, isn't it? Like, filled with all these canals and stuff.
Suzhou downtown is, it's like, it's kind of like Venice of China.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of... They're not there anymore because we turned it into an industrial park, but there are still tourist sites where you can see, and it's like the Venice, China.
Yeah, I'm sure... Believe me, I'm sure when you were there, it was a lot different than when I was there. So did you go to international school there?
Yeah, I did. I went to a British international school there as well.
You as well. Oh, right. I'm trying to remember. Where did you go to school here?
I went to St. Andrews International School, which is also a British system. Yeah,
I didn't know that, so we'll get back to that in a second. What was it like living in China, like moving from Sriracha, which is, basically just regular Thailand, and going to China, was that like a big adjustment for you? Were you scared or nervous or just excited about doing that?
I was pretty excited. My mom thought I would be really scared. She came up to me, she was like, "Oh, Anita, we're moving to China. If you don't want to, it's okay."
If you don't
But I
want
was
to,
like,
it's okay.
"Yeah, I want to."
What kind of school were you going to in Sriracha though? Were you going to international school there as well or no?
No, it was a private girls' convent school, so it was very strict, and I didn't like it very much.
But was it an international education or was it an English-based education? Because
No, it was completely all in Thai. So when I went to China, I had no knowledge of English, and I just had to work from zero English.
that's amazing. And how about your parents? I mean, it's a tricky question, right? But like, were your mom and dad sort of international people in the sense that for them moving to China was an easy thing to do, or for them was that a little bit of an adventure as well?
I'm pretty sure it was an adventure for the whole family because my mom, before then, she's never been outside of Thailand very much either. And my dad, the only times he went outside of Thailand was for work. So moving was definitely a big change for the whole family.
And how about just like the living conditions? What kind of house did you live in when you were there?
In China?
Yeah.
We lived in an apartment in one of the, it was kind of like a downtown of the industrial park, so it was pretty nice.
Got it. And do you have brothers and sisters?
Yep, I have one younger sister. She moved to China with me when she was only 4,
Oh, wow.
so yeah.
But what did you feel like the benefit was to you? Like, I really wanted to ask you if you came home, if you left when you were 9, you came home when you were 14, is that right?
Yeah.
And did you come home speaking Mandarin?
I'm actually not very good at Mandarin because I just mostly spoke English when I was in China.
Yeah, fair enough. Is it something that was interesting to you? Like, you're in China, it must have been.
The community I lived in an industrial park, it was kind of an expatriate community, so I wasn't like the only time I would use Mandarin was if I went shopping, but everyone else around me were expats and I went to a school of international students. So I didn't really get to use Chinese. I think I learned more Chinese when I came back to Thailand than when I was in China.
Did you study Mandarin when you were at St. Andrews?
Yeah, for the IB diploma.
Right. So you got an international IB as well? Or was it a bilingual IB?
Just international, because by the time I got back to Thailand, I forgot all my Thai and I couldn't take the Thai language A courses.
Love it. So when you're talking to your mom and dad and when you're talking to your sister, what language are you speaking?
Almost all English now because when we're in China, like I went there not knowing any English, and so I went to an English second language program in my school, and
Right.
then my dad forced us to speak English only at home so that we would
Wow.
learn more English so we can speak at school,
Got it.
and then because of that, it's stuck, and now it's hard to reverse back to Thai at home.
But does your mom speak English?
She understands what I say to her, and she would reply in English and in Thai, and I would just speak back in English, and it's like a bilingual conversation.
I love this. I used to say, like, if the aliens look down on this, they just think, what is going on in this household kind of thing, right? Like, how come they're not speaking the same language? How come humans don't do this to each other? So when you left China, were you happy to leave or was it a little bit of a bummer, you think?
Because I spent my adolescent year there, when I first left, I was pretty sad that I had to
Yeah.
leave my friends and the school
Right.
I went to because I kind of liked the school. So
Yeah.
it was really hard at first to adjust to St. Andrews and Bangkok because it's very different from China because China is very structural, where Bangkok is just kind of sometimes kind of everywhere. But over time, I've adapted to Bangkok because it is home and everyone there speaks my language, and
Right.
I felt a lot closer to community in Bangkok than I did to the community in China.
Yeah, I mean, culture matters, right? Language matters. It's really interesting when you finally are home, home, whatever that means. It actually feels easier a bit, no? So when you came back, did you weren't living in Sriracha, obviously. Were you living in where were you living in Bangkok?
I was living near my school in Bangkok, around Ekamai.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I go by St. Andrews almost every day. Were you at the new campus? Was that new one there when you were going, or no? They must have built it just as you were leaving.
I was in the old campus for 2 years and a new one for my final year.
That new campus is really beautiful, no?
Yeah. It was kind of funny because they just like bought a school and then took it down and then built it into St. Andrews.
They just built some pretty incredible stuff there, right?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Oh, you're right. There was another school there. I forgot about that.
Yeah, CV Corn.
Yeah, CV Corn. I've been riding by there for years, right?
Yeah, and then they just bought it and closed it. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, some of the core facilities were already there, right? And they just either renovated or just built the extra stuff. There's a beautiful pool there and a whole bunch of other really nice facilities there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of the IB program?
I was excited to go into it because the coursework was a lot to do the exams and all the projects, but I liked how they forced us to do the CAS program, the Creativity Activity Service, because that's what I got the most out of in high school. And wow. I think that's what got me here, not my grades and stuff I learned in class.
Yeah, I say this a lot when I talk to kids that have gone through an IB program. I feel really envious, right? Because it feels like a very interesting way to learn. It's almost like they're not teaching you like individual subjects, but they're teaching you how to learn and kind of about the world and about life. That's what it seems like to me, no?
Yeah, definitely.
What did you do for you? Go ahead.
It was a lot of self-learning, which it's basically what university is like. So when I came here, I was like, oh, this is normal. But then people who came from schools that didn't do the IB, they were in shock a bit by how much self-studying was required.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the other really interesting things I found as well, is that college life, university life is very different for most people than high school life. But the intensity and the sort of strictness and the scheduling of the IB program makes the transition to university, I've always thought, it's always seemed to me, a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely.
So what did you do for CAS?
Quite a lot.
Tell me.
Okay, so in first term, in first year, we had to choose a service project that we wanted to be involved in for the entire year.
Oh, wow.
And I chose a Bandek Foundation. And what we had to do, we had to kind of raise funds to donate to them and then visit them towards the end of the year. I organized two events, I think, to raise the funds for that. One was a Halloween dance and the other was a prom for the year 6 students. And with those events was honestly where I found out about my leadership capabilities, because I didn't know I had that before, but through organizing the event, it sort of naturally came out.
Got it.
And I also did the Model United Nations. I joined it in the first term, not knowing what is involved, and I was really scared of public speaking. After joining for about a term, I actually really liked it, and then I stuck with it for 2 years, and then in the second year of IB, I became the Secretary General for the club, which opened up a lot more opportunities as well.
I want to talk about both of those things. So the Bandek Foundation, for people that don't know what it is actually a really interesting organization, started in Chiang Mai and focused on helping kids in need is probably the wrong word, but probably kids and families in danger that are associated with construction sites. Do I have that right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I actually, as I think I told you this, as part of my social innovation podcast, I interviewed or had a conversation with one of the people that works there as well. And when they opened their office, which is in Ekamai, I actually went to the office opening, but you should probably give a little bit more detail about what Bandek is, how you found out about it, and just why you cared.
I found out about it through my teachers, because we had to pick a program to work with, a charity to work with, and there were multiple charities to choose from, but this one, to me, it just struck out because every day when I walk past a new building construction near Ekamai, I would see workers with children who are sitting in very rough conditions. And I always thought, like, how could I help these people? And when they introduced Bandek Foundation to me, I was like, okay, I'm going to choose this foundation And, you know, I really put an effort to raise the funds for them. So, and then, you know, go visit them in July and see the children, how they are, and, you know, just interact with them.
It's pretty amazing the difference between the way those kids live and the way sort of we live. Is that fair to say? Like, do you understand? It's really interesting, right? If you live your day-to-day life without ever interacting with people that are different than you, it's hard to understand that there actually are people in the world that are different than you are. And yet, again, when you wake up every day and just go to school and struggle through IB, you may or may not realize, like, that in a way, we're lucky, right? We live this life of privilege.
Definitely.
Right? And yet, when you watch what Bandek does, you kind of learn that not everybody gets to live that way, and it's kind of interesting,
Definitely. When I went to Bandek, like in Chiang Mai, to visit their headquarters, one of the things we had to do with was to redecorate a playground, which used to be like a warehouse, and then we turned to a playground. And when the children came back from school, they were so happy, and I have never seen anyone so happy about a warehouse being turned into a playground. And I was shocked at the simple things it takes to make these children happy, where for us it takes a lot to make us that happy.
Right.
It was just so amazing to see the simplicity of their lives, and it just really shows the contrast between our life and their lives.
But what does it tell you, like, at larger scale about what people with privilege can do or should do for people that that weren't necessarily born into privilege, right?
Yeah, I think more of us should go directly to these communities and help them directly, because we might think, oh, it takes a lot to do, or it takes a lot of organization, but it doesn't take a lot at all to make their life just a little bit better or make their day a little bit better. I spent a day with the kids playing, I don't remember what game it was. It was some ball game. I wasn't very good at it, but they were very happy that we were there. And when we were leaving, you know, some people started crying because they didn't want us to leave because they were having so much fun. That was just a memorable experience.
Yeah, and look, I think that for those of us that are lucky, if we've had an experience like you had where you get to see that, what the pureness of somebody else's joy. And like you said, like the simplicity actually, and the pureness inside that simplicity is actually something that's really important to me. And I think once you figure that out, it does a bunch of things, at least for me, right? One is it puts my life and my personal struggles into perspective, right? Like if the hardest thing for me is knowing that, like, you know, my iPhone screen cracked, kind of, it doesn't really mean that much to a certain extent, right? It's not good, but it's definitely not like being in danger. And I remember when I was, soon after I graduated from college, I was in New York and I had some leftover food from dinner and it was really cold. It was in December and I was on a business trip and I gave like all this leftover food that was still warm to a homeless guy. And his face lit up. Like it just lit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was like pure and it was spontaneous.
Yeah. That, that actually, a similar situation happened to me in Vancouver. I had I went to a pizza restaurant in this area called East Hastings, and it was an area where it is known to have a lot of homeless people around there living in tents and stuff. And afterwards, I went to give one of them my leftover pizza, and the same thing happened where their face just lit up because they were so hungry. And
And you know, one of the things that that taught me was I never throw away food.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when I go out to dinner, even if it's embarrassing, I'll ask for the leftovers and I'll always try to give it to somebody else. And when I lived in Japan, I used to, they had Friday night beer night at UBS when I was working there. And there was always pizza and beer and just food left over. And when I first started working at UBS, I said to them, okay, just whatever's left over, let me have. And they're like, dude, you're not going to take this home, are you? I'm like, no, I'm going to give this away. Because otherwise you're just going to throw it away. But once that becomes part of your life, in a way it doesn't even seem like community service anymore.
Yeah.
It just seems like the right way to live. Yeah, it is. It's just something you do.
Yeah.
Anyway. So Tell me how you ended up in Vancouver.
At first, I was looking at a lot of American schools, and one of my goals is after college, I do want to continue working wherever I'm studying. And I looked into U.S. immigration laws, and it was a lot tougher than Canada. And I went to talk to my university counselor, and he said, if you do want to work after, or if you want it guaranteed, you might want to pick Canada or Australia. And right. I ended up picking Canada because it's closer to U.S. So if I ended up working and I do want to move to U.S. eventually, I would be able to do that easier.
So what was it about either the U.S. or Canada that made you want to, like, why did you decide that you wanted to work where you graduated?
I think it's just something that ever since I was young, my parents always, you know, grew in me that, you know, if you get to work abroad, that would be very good for you in the future.
So cool.
And because I always moved, I guess, as I was a kid, I don't really like staying in one place. So if I get to work in Canada after and then move somewhere else and then move somewhere else again, that's kind of the ideal life I was envisioning for myself.
So you and I have done this completely in reverse, right? No, I'm serious. When I was a kid, I was born in California, raised in Boston, Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, went to college in Connecticut, and then, so not different countries, right, but different states. And in America, sometimes those states can feel like different countries.
Yeah.
But I did my study abroad in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And then I lived in Japan for 22 years after that.
22 years, wow.
So I completely understand the feeling.
Yeah.
And how long have you been there now?
In Vancouver? About 8 months.
Okay, so it's your first year.
Yeah, it's my first year.
And what are you studying?
I'm studying commerce at the Sauder School of Business in UBC.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
And what do you think you're going to do when you graduate? I know it's still early. I mean, you're still just a freshman, right? So it's hard to figure out, but...
I honestly don't know. It keeps changing every time. Like, it's a lot of pressure at school because everyone is like, oh, we have to go into real estate. We have to go into investment banking. And... while it does seem like, oh, that's the easiest way to kind of get by, I don't know if that's really my passion. Like, at the end, I don't really see myself working for someone else or working for a client. So I was hoping to start something of my own.
Awesome.
Because I always was leading in high school and wanted to see myself working for someone else. And I might just go into investment banking or something of that sort for a few years, but when I have enough to start something of myself, I would just step out and start something that I can, that I'm actually passionate about, but I don't know what I would do yet.
That's a fair answer. Look, I think there's a lot of pressure on college students to figure out what you want to do, and I'll put it in quotes, like, for the rest of your life, and frankly, I think that's impossible to do. Like, as a 20-year-old, like, how could you possibly know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you know?
Yeah.
And are you still doing community service type stuff when you're there?
Yeah. When I first arrived, I kind of lost track of that because community service was something I was always involved in high schools, and not even high school, maybe from middle school all the way to high school. Yeah. But when I came here, because it's a business school, it's a lot of pressure to join all the business clubs, like, UBC Finance Association, UBC Young Women in Business, and the trail from community service and joined these clubs. And going to their events and going to their meetings, I didn't really feel connected to the club. I would have to force myself to go to events, and I didn't really enjoy it. So in the second term, I met a friend who is Thai as well. He goes to UBC, and he said he's in a fraternity called Alpha Phi Omega, which is a co-ed community service fraternity. So I thought that was interesting. So then I ended up joining a fraternity. And it's really funny to say that to people because they'd be like, huh? Fraternity? Do you mean a sorority?
Right.
And I'm like, no, it's a co-ed community service fraternity. And I just got initiated a few days ago, and I was a pledge for 2 months.
Oh, wow.
And even as a pledge, they really involve you into the community service part of the club. As a pledge, I've already done 3 different community service projects, and it really showed me how much I love community service again, and it kind of provided a path for me that my extracurricular in business school doesn't have to be related to business. It can still be what I love to do, and I feel like I would go further doing what I love, which is community service, rather than doing the, you know, stereotypical business school student extracurricular activities.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that there had been, at least I wish that I'd had some exposure to some stuff like this when I was in college, right? I did exactly what you're talking about. I went and worked for Morgan Stanley and worked for Goldman Sachs for 20-something years and, you know, destroyed my soul, basically. and I think there's a secular change taking place in the way businesses are being built, and I think you can build something that's socially innovative but also makes a profit, yeah. Right? And I think that's the right thing to do. And it's interesting you said before, like leadership, it just came naturally. And I think that's what leadership is. And I'm glad you said it.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
I think so, because I didn't know that I had those abilities. But as soon as I had to do it, it just came. And right. Every time we have a group project in university, it always just naturally comes. I never have to be like, oh, I'm the leader. It just came as we were working.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I think that the people that surround you can also sense it. In other words, no one is mad is the wrong word, but no one is sort of jealous of somebody who's the leader, because that just, like you said, it happens naturally. It just gravitates that way. Yeah, and I think it's okay to do both things. Like, just, you know, being a leader doesn't necessarily make you a better person than somebody who follows you. There's a role for everybody, right? But somebody has to fill that role, and clearly you're doing that.
Business school kind of changed my image of what a leader is significantly. Before, in my head, a leader was just the one who, you know, organized a task, divide the task, and give it to, you know, other people. But in business school really taught me that a leader is also about making sure that your teammates are doing well.
Right.
Because I remember in high school, sometimes I would have to work with my friends, and sometimes my friends had conflict, and I would have to make sure that I used to have a strict rule that, oh, emotions and work can't mix. But coming to business school, I was wrong. You really do have to consider people's emotions and teamwork, your team is not going to work together. And that was the biggest revelation I had coming here. It seems obvious now, but back then I didn't know. But now it's like, oh okay, do have to consider emotions.
That does matter, kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah.
So before I let you go, what do you do to keep fit? Like, what are your new ways to work out? And why do you like to do it so much?
When I first came here, I was very shy to go to the gym because it's intimidating, since there are a lot of very large university boys in the gym. And I would get intimidated. But then one of my friends, he does do like powerlifting, weightlifting. And he was like, hey, you should try this. And I tried it. And now, because I'm seeing results, I'm actually enjoying it. I wouldn't have to force myself to go to the gym anymore. And it's been something I've been doing almost like 5 times a week. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost addicting, right? What do you mean when you say you're seeing results?
Like before, when I only did running, like cardio, I didn't really see much changes in, you know, how I felt during the day. And how I look physically, and I would feel tired afterwards, and I wouldn't want to go the next day. But when I do weightlifting, it's a lot of changes in a small amount of time in how I look physically, and I didn't feel as tired afterwards. In fact, I was more energetic throughout the day.
Yeah, because of like the adrenaline that shoots through your body. But don't you think it's cool to feel just like a little bit stronger?
Yeah, like sometimes when a while ago when I pick up a box, I would have to use so much strength, but now I can just pick up a box and be like, oh, look at me, I can carry 2 boxes.
Give me more boxes. I think it's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
I try to work out like 4 or 5 days a week as well. So it's something that I find really interesting too. I really appreciate your time, and I just want to say thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for, you know, using your very late night time to interview me too.
It's my pleasure.